Hello and welcome to the Plus R Purist. This is episode 2 of the first season of the Plus R Purist. Today we're going to talk about the needs of the horse. This is something that's universal regardless of the training methods you use. It's the basics of having good horse care. Many behavioral issues are actually stemmed from care issues, so the first thing I do anytime I get a horse with behavioral problems is try to identify if all of their needs are met. When I talk about meeting the needs of the horse, I'm talking about creating an enclosure or an environment for the horse where they can live their normal horsey lives in between the interactions that they have with humans. Creating a nice enclosure for your horse can be really challenging. A lot of pets are a lot easier to care for enclosure-wise because they take up way less space. Horses are a little different. You usually won't keep them at your house. I guess you could, but typically you're not going to have them live in your house with you. And typically you can't create an enclosure that's rather small. You're going to need quite a bit of space. Humans have invented a small enclosure for horses. We call them stalls. And unfortunately, if you're a huge fan of stalls, this is probably going to be hard to hear because this podcast is going to talk a lot about why stalls are actually not ideal for horses. Stalls were created to make it a little easier for people to care for horses. And they have a place in the horse world. I like to think of stalls as being sort of like a travel cage or a crate for any other animal. That said, it doesn't travel like it does for other animals, but it's that same idea of it's a smaller enclosure you can use to isolate an animal, to put an animal for like any sort of separate care that they need, to isolate them for like veterinary care, take them to the groomer, i.e. like getting the farrier out to see them. You might use it for like training to like separate them from other animals or to bring them somewhere where it's easy for you to get to them, but you're not going to have your animal live in a small cage like that. Typically, you're not going to have a dog live in a crate 24/7. Typically, you're not going to have a bird live in a tiny cage. Typically, you're not going to have a reptile in like a little tiny traveling cage. That said, even as I listed those examples, I know that it happens. It's unfortunately not super uncommon in the animal world and in the animal care world for animals to live in way less space than they actually need to be happy and healthy. And that's true for horses too. So I'm going to talk all about what you need to do to try and really properly care for your horses and keep them happy and healthy. And we're going to talk about what the enclosure is going to need. I'm not going to go over like a how-to on like how to set up a proper enclosure for your horse. The biggest thing that'll impact the enclosure you set up for your horse is the property that you have. So it's a lot of creativity because you need to figure out how to use the land to your advantage. There are lots of guides online for like the pasture paradise type setups, which are really beneficial. But I'm going to go over the needs of the horse. So what needs your horse has and some basic ways to meet them and some ways to not meet them that you should try to avoid. And hopefully if you have this knowledge, you can use your creative thinking to create a nice space for your horse to live. So I'll be listing out 8 key needs of the horse. I actually have a poster that sort of summarizes these things on my website. If you want to go like take a look, feel free to buy one off of me. If you email me asking for it, I'll probably give it to you anyways. As you can tell, I haven't added ads to these podcasts, and that's because I'm a sucker for believing that like people should be able to educate themselves without it turning commercial on them. That said, if I get enough views, I probably will monetize them because money is good and horses are expensive, but we'll see. Anyways, moving on to the core content. I'm going to try to like go kind of fast because there's a lot to get through. Number 1, safety. So this is the number 1 priority to horses. If they don't feel safe, everything else will fade away. They're not going to worry about getting any of their other needs met until they feel that they are safe. Safety is the ability to feel that they have some control over their comfort and their environment. Typically, that means that they have defense from predators, they have the ability to escape unpleasant stimulus, and they have access to the necessities of life. In order to have defense from predators, they're going to need to have a herd presence, their safety in numbers, and horses will always feel safer with other horses around, and they need to have the ability to flee. That ability to flee sort of falls under the ability to escape unpleasant stimulus category. They need to feel like they can get away from anything that might do them harm. If they feel that they can get away from that, then they're going to feel a lot safer. Having open space is really key to this. They need to have an area to, they need to have area to move around so that if they do need to flee, they can actually flee somewhere. If they're in too small of a space, then that's going to really inhibit their ability to get away if needed. And even if we know that there's no reason they should need to get away, that doesn't mean that they know that. Like if we put a horse in a stall in a barn, we can usually pretty confidently say like a mountain lion is not going to jump into your stall and eat you. But the horse doesn't know that. They can't speak English, unfortunately, so we can't just tell them that. And it would take a long time for them to start to trust that mountain lions are not going to get into their stall. And so in a horse's mind, being trapped in a stall is really dangerous because if a predator were to get in there, they wouldn't have anywhere to run and that would probably end really badly for them. So that can feel really unsafe and that can cause them to lose this sort of safety priority and that will affect their ability to search for those other key needs. Another way that we can work them through their safety... Safety can also be a training issue, particularly when you're using pressure release training. I see a lot of people that use inescapable pressures in order to train. So if you apply like an adverse stimulus or a pressure to a horse and they have no way to escape it, then they are not going to feel safe. They are going to feel extremely threatened and that's going to stress them out. Now, maybe there is a way for them to escape it. Maybe if they do this one behavior, you'll stop the pressure. But again, they don't know that. That's one of the hard parts about training is you can't tell them, hey, I want you to do this. And that can be really detrimental to their feeling of security and safety. The last thing you can do to help them feel safe is to give them access to all the necessities of life. So make sure that they have all their other needs met, that they have an ability to live a happy, healthy life. They have food, they have water, they have whatever resources they need to live, and that will help them to feel nice and secure. Next up is the need for proper ingestion. That's the ability to follow their natural digestive patterns, and it's typically divided into their need to feed and their need to drink. So for feeding, horses will typically spend 16 to 18 hours per day foraging being when you consume long stem fiber. That means grazing, that means eating hay, anything where they're searching for any sort of like long stem roughage or forage, that's going to be considered foraging. And they do spend 16 to 18 hours doing that. So if your horse gets through their hay and they're eating for less than 16 to 18 hours a day, that's problematic. That's a need that's not being met. So really, the ideal situation is to give your horse unlimited access to forage. That doesn't mean they need to have like all the alfalfa they could ever eat and they always have access to it. It can be a low quality hay. It can be grass. It can be any type of like forage. As long as they have access to the forage, then that need will be met. The type of forage will depend on their nutrition needs, which is a whole nother podcast. But they should have access to forage all day long. They'll also spend 1 to 2 hours a day browsing. Browsing is when they seek for non-forage food. So they usually go off in pairs or a small group. Sometimes it'll be the whole herd, but usually it's in smaller pairs or groups. And they'll search for some sort of food that's not a forage. So maybe it's a vegetable, maybe it's a branch or a bark or a root or apples, carrots, like whatever they're looking for. When they go off looking for non-forage, that's called browsing. So that leaves like 4 to 6 hours in the day to do things that aren't eating. And that's when they'll fulfill all of their other needs. They usually won't spend more than 2 hours fasting. Some horses have been documented as spending up to like 4 hours fasting, but anything more than that is because they don't have access to food or they have some sort of medical issue going on, not because they're just choosing to not be eating. So if you can keep your horse from spending more than 2 hours without food, that's ideal. And really, if they are fasting, it should be their choice. It shouldn't be because we're restricting their access to food or they don't have any, or they ate all of theirs. It should be because they're choosing to fast. Next up is drinking. So horses typically do like 1 to 2 large drinks a day. They don't sip on water throughout the day. So it's ideal that they have at least a day's worth of water available to them at all times. So if they do want to come over and gulp up a whole bunch of water, they can do it. It also tends to be a social activity. Usually they will take turns drinking just one at a time, and then they all go off and do other things for a while. Not always, but typically. The rule of thumb is that most horses drink about 1% of their body weight. So that tends to be about like 8 gallons for like a 1,000-pound horse. Most people say like 5 to 10 gallons a day. It can really differ horse to horse. Most horses won't drink more than like 20 gallons a day. That's sort of the maximum. But that said, if you have a large enough brood mare and it's really hot outside, it might happen. So my rule of thumb is to provide 40 gallons per day for one horse and then to add an additional 10 to 15 gallons for each other horse. And that's for your average horse. My brood mares get pretty much double that and they still drink plenty of it. And it'll depend also on like how hard the horse works, if they sweat a lot, if it's hot outside versus if it's cold outside. But that sort of rule of thumb has worked really well for me. That doesn't mean you have to have a huge water tank. You can fill it up more consistently throughout the day. So you want to stick to that rule of they should have, really ideally, they should have at least like a 20-gallon trough available to them so that they can gulp down 20 gallons at once if like it is really hot and they're really thirsty and they really want to. But if you're filling your horse's water multiple times a day, you can have a smaller bucket. I fill my horse's water once per day, so they only get it filled up once in the morning. And usually I don't have to fill the entire bucket. I'm usually topping off water. And then if I need to clean the water bucket, what I'll do is I'll wait until the afternoon. I'll like skip the top off in the morning. And then in the afternoon, I'll go around and I'll dump and I'll clean the buckets. And the main thing with any sort of food or water is to observe your horse and adjust things as they need it done. If you notice that they're not drinking as much as you expected, obviously you want to make sure they are drinking, but if they're just not drinking as much, then you can maybe fill the water tank a little less often. That's great. A little less work for you. Or you could switch to a smaller bucket if you wanted to, but ideally more is more. So you want to give them plenty of access. If you notice that the water tank consistently gets really low, to the point where like one horse couldn't come over and get a decent amount of water, you might need to fill it up more often or get a second tank or a bigger tank to replace that initial one. Same thing with the food. Maybe you think you gave your horse enough forage to last 24 hours and then you came back to feed them the next day and they were out. So you need to be giving them more than that or feeding them more frequently. Personally, I like to keep my barn chores to a minimum so I can keep my training to a maximum. So my horses get fed once per day, with the exception of the broodmares who get fed twice daily because they need so many calories. And occasionally, if I have a horse that's in really intense work, they'll get fed twice a day so that I can space out the concentrates a little better and space out any alfalfa feedings. So I feed them their forage once daily. They get a whole bunch of it. They chomp on it all day long, and then the next day I come back and give them more, with the key point being that they never run out. So by the time I get out there the next day, they should not be out of forage. If they are, then I adjust my feeding plan so that they'll be getting more so that doesn't happen again. Next up is body care. Body care is their ability to carry out normal bodily functions, such as evacuation, thermoregulation, rolling, and grooming. Evacuation is pretty straightforward. That's anything that comes out of the tail end of your horse. So they need to be able to poop and to pee, and also to exist away from that poop and pee once they're done. This is something that stalls can be problematic with, because once they go to the bathroom, they're not able to move away from that waste. And I know that in pastures, they still walk over their waste. They sometimes eat things that they have pooped or peed on. It happens, but typically they're able to stay away from it for the most part. I will rarely, if ever, see my horses eating something that has a fresh poop or pee nearby it. It usually takes a rainfall or a harrowing until they'll start going to that spot again. But in stalls, they don't necessarily have that option. They have to walk right on top of it, eat right next to it. They don't get to get away from it. Obviously, the more often you clean, the better that gets. But unless you are waiting and every single time your horse goes to the bathroom, you run in and take it away, then you're not going to be able to keep them away from their feces or anything super long term. One point that's sort of debated surrounding their need to evacuate is whether or not they should be allowed to do that at rest. Most people agree that they should be able to stop to urinate, but a lot of people debate and argue over whether or not we should have them keep moving under saddle or while working, even while they're going poop. The biggest argument I hear is for competitive purposes. They're not going to be able to stop at a show to go poop. Which in my opinion is ridiculous. I think that the horse's ability to like carry out their normal bodily functions should be prioritized over anything else at a competition. I don't think that competitions should take points off if your horse has to go poop halfway through something. It is possible to potty train a horse to teach them to go on command. The same way you can potty train a dog that they learn a word and they do something on command. You can potty train a bird, you can potty train a reptile, you can potty train a horse. I don't know that it's the most practical thing. I haven't potty trained any of my horses. I haven't like taught them to go on command, but that is something that you could use to prevent issue at competition would be to teach your horse to go on a cue. So before they go into the ring or before you get started, you ask them to go, and then hopefully they won't have to go during the competition, just like people do with like agility dogs. But that said, I do allow my horses to stop if they choose to. I leave it up to them. Whenever people tell me that it's fine, that it's not a problem, they can poop while running, I argue, well, like, so can we. Like, we can poop while running. Will we enjoy it? Will it be pleasant? No, but we can. Any animal can. And I've only seen horses poop while moving when they're doing a stress poop. So when horses get really stressed and they lift their tail and they give you a nice liquidy present. And I don't know that I'd qualify that as like a normal behavior because it usually only happens when they're really stressed out. Moving on to the next portion of body care, that would be thermoregulation. Thermoregulation is their ability to regulate or escape excessive hot or cold. The best way to do this is with their natural coat. Their coats are really, really awesome. You should definitely research them if you're interested. And I will probably talk about all of my opinions on clipping and blanketing and coats later, but I think if I throw that into this podcast, it's going to get way too long. So I'll just stick to a simple, their natural coat is always their best defense, but there are definitely times when you might need to use a blanket. Clipping is highly overdone. I sort of am along the same lines as stalls. There's a place for it. There's a reason for it, but most people should not be doing it, and yet they do. So moving on from that, let's talk about rolling. So rolling, you've probably seen your horse do. It's really cute. Most people get really excited when they see it for the first time. They go down into like they're about to lay down, and then they stretch and they scratch and they wiggle around, and usually they will flip over to the other side and do the same thing over there. If they are unable to flip over, it usually means that they have either some sort of like medical reason they can't, like an injury or a soreness, or it can be fitness related. That said, if a horse gets adequate motion and movement in its day-to-day, and has a decent amount of space to move around in, they'll usually have the strength they need to flip over. Another reason they can't flip over is sometimes they'll try to roll on a hill. I've seen a couple of my horses they'll lay down on a hill and then they'll try to flip over going like up the hill, and then they'll just struggle for a while and I start to get scared, but then they're fine. They just remember that gravity exists. So anyways, in order to get a proper roll in, a horse needs to have about a 20-foot circle. They'll need even more if they're bigger. So depending on the size of the horse, you'll want to give them a decent amount of space. That's another thing that can't happen if they're in a stall, especially if it's a smaller stall. Most stalls are either 10 by 10, 12 by 12, or 15 by 15 with some variation in there. So if your horse's stall doesn't allow for that 20-foot circle, or even if it does, but they're too big for even that, you'll want to give them access to a yard where they can roll. The type of ground will also impact that. Your horses might not want to roll on certain types of ground, and they'll want to roll on others. Usually sand is a really popular one. Most horses love rolling around on sand, which can be problematic. Sometimes you'll take them in a sand arena with your nice, brand new, expensive saddle, and down they go. But that's an example of maybe it's just that they got excited of the sand, but you can also think if that sort of thing is happening, they try to roll on a trail ride or in a certain arena or certain footing. Think back to when was the last time they had the opportunity to roll in a situation like that, and make sure that that need is being met. Last thing we'll talk about with body care is grooming. So grooming is their ability to be free from excessive uncleanliness or like unsanitary conditions. The best way to make grooming easy on you is to keep them in a clean environment. So if they have a lot of freedom to move away from where their feces is, or where there's anything like excessive amounts of mud, for the most part, they will. Horses like different types of grounds, and there are situations where they like hanging out in the mud. So even if you have like a mostly
perfect manicured pasture, and then there's a little mud corner. I can't promise your horse isn't going to roll in the mud corner. In fact, they probably will, because it's fun to roll in, apparently. If you ask a horse, that's what they'll say, because they do it all the time. And it can be frustrating for us, but it feels good for them, so that's great. That said, it's probably a good idea to keep them somewhat clean, too. We have lots of tools for grooming them ourselves, and they'll also do a practice called mutual grooming, which is a form of scratching. It's not actually linked as much to cleanliness as much as it is to just like a form of like social bonding and a little bit of like a scratching need. They typically will stand with their heads at each other's withers, so like their necks are overlapping, and they'll start by sort of biting at the withers with their lips or their teeth, and they'll scratch and they'll go up the neck and down along the shoulders and down the back and on the belly and all over the horse, and they'll scratch each other, and it's really, really cute. If you haven't seen it, you should look up videos or pictures of horses mutual grooming, because it's really sweet. They give each other kisses and it's precious. All right, moving on to point number four. Point number four is rest. That's your horse's ability to rest, ability to choose when to rest, and like I like to say, it's their ability to not be resting. And the reason I say that is because horses are typically awake at least 20 hours a day. They only rest for like up to 4 hours a day, and the rest of the time they are eating and they are fulfilling their other needs. Personally, I've noticed that my horses like to sleep around midday when the sun is shining, so it's not always fair to assume that they're going to sleep at night, although some of them will. It can be really problematic when people put their horses in a stall at night in order for the horse to sleep, because they're not getting a choice in when they get to sleep. And also, odds are they don't want to sleep at night, and so when you put them in the stall, they're just going to be bored and have problems unless you have, like, fitted that stall with the stuff they need to exist happily. When we talk about the need to sleep, we're also going to talk about the need to get the deep sleep cycle, which is the rapid eye movement, or REM, or R-E-M sleep cycle. In order to get REM sleep, they need to be on their side with their legs and head outstretched and resting on the ground. I jokingly call this the dead horse pose. It's the one that you'll see, like, the picture of the horse laying in the field, and there's a sign posted on the fence saying, like, no, he's not dead. Yes, he's fine. He's just sleeping. Please stop calling the SPCA, or whatever it is. I've had clients that, like, run in the barn panicked because they think one of my horses is dead, when in actuality they're just sleeping. That's just how they lay down sometimes. And although they can also sleep standing up, it's not a deep REM sleep. In order to get that, they do need to be laying down. And in order to get all the way down with their legs outstretched safely without a fear of being cast or getting stuck, they're going to need a 15 to 20 foot circle. So again, if your stall isn't large enough, your horse isn't going to be able to get that deep sleep. If they aren't able to get deep sleep, then they're going to get sleep deprivation, which is a condition where the horse will not have enough sleep, and then they'll start to fall asleep when doing other things. Sleep-deprived horses aren't going to, like, randomly fall asleep in the middle of being ridden or anything like that, but what happens is when they start to drowse, or they start to, like, go into that lighter sleep state while they're standing up, their body will instinctively try to go into a deep sleep because it needs it, and then the horse's knees will buckle or collapse, and they'll start to fall on their front end. If the horse is sleep deprived enough, they might collapse all the way to the ground, but typically their knees buckle and then they jump right back up because that falling sensation will startle them awake. I can't imagine how uncomfortable it must be for horses who are in that state. I have seen a few horses in that state and it is pretty heartbreaking. I had a mare that did that. And it was so sad. You'd be grooming her, and she hated being groomed, but she loved the soft brush. And so you'd get to that soft brush, and she'd just start to fall asleep and start to fall asleep. And then her knees would just buckle, and she would start to fall onto her forehand. And she was usually cross-tied, and she would startle awake, and she would be fine. But it was pretty heartbreaking to see her so exhausted, simply because she didn't have access to a place to sleep, which I didn't know at the time. I had a suspicion, but I wasn't educated enough to really understand what was going on. And so my vet helped me to make some other changes to her environment. But in the end, what had to happen is we had to get her to a place where she had more space so that she was able to lay down and choose the type of ground that she was laying down upon. And in case anybody suspects that their horse might have sleep deprivation, an easy way to identify sleep deprivation in a horse is they will have rubs on their front fetlocks. So on the front of their front legs, right above their hooves, they'll have little rubs right on that joint above the pastern. And those rubs are almost always caused by sleep deprivation. When a horse lays down, sometimes if the ground is too rough, it'll cause rubs on their hocks. But It's really rare for a horse to get rubs on their fetlocks, except when they're collapsing from sleep deprivation. So if that's happening to your horse, then you might want to consider making sure they have enough space to lay down and proper ground to lay down on to ensure that they are able to get to sleep and they aren't sleep deprived. The next need of the horse is the need for motion, so that's their ability to move around as desired. This is definitely the biggest problem that we have with keeping horses in stalls or in small enclosures. The main way that horses will fulfill their motion need is through the graze walk. So whenever they're grazing, they will take a bite or two or a few bites of whatever they're eating on the ground, usually grass, and then they'll take a step. Bite, 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 step, bite, 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 step. And they walk around as they're eating their grass. They don't tend to stay in one place for more than a few bites. And that allows them to get quite a bit of motion. That motion is good for them mentally. It's good for their joints, for their muscles. And also it aids digestion. Each time they take that step, they're putting a different leg forward, and that's allowing them to stretch one side of their gut and contract the other. And then they swing their belly around as they're walking to take the next step, slosh the food around nicely, and then they're stretching out the other side. So it's really important for digestion as well as for their general like muscle health and psychological health. Other types of motion include ranging and seeking. Both of these are when a horse will move with friends. Ranging is when the entire herd will move together, and seeking is when it's just like one small group or a pair of horses. Horses don't tend to move out on their own very often. Like, they'll spend some time a short distance from the herd, but they don't tend to travel in isolation. They tend to travel in at least a pair, if not a small group. And whenever they are seeking, they're typically searching for a resource, such as browsing for food or searching for water or shelter or something like that. The last category of motion is play. Play is my personal favorite because I find it adorable when horses do it. We can categorize play into four different categories. The first one is object play, which is when they make contact and manipulate an object physically. Usually they use their mouth and their lips and their nose to just interact with something and figure out what it is. I have one horse that likes to do that with fuzzy things, including dogs and raccoons and cats and other things that like to bite her, much to my dismay. But she does. When we talk about object play, I like to use the analogy, especially with my younger students. If you've ever seen like a fidget spinner sitting somewhere, and you just get the urge to touch it and to move it around, or you see something that just looks interesting and you just want to pick it up and investigate it. That need and that feeling that you want to just touch and interact with something, horses have that. And that's when they do object play. The next type of play is locomotor play. If it's your first time ever going to a beach or this particular beach, you're really excited to like see the area, you're not going to like casually walk up to the beach and just be like, oh yes, this is a beach, it's very nice. No, you're gonna run onto the beach and you're gonna feel the sand in between your toes and move your feet around and you're gonna splash in the water and you're gonna have fun with it. And when you're excited and you want to just move around and express your excitement through movement, that's a form of locomotor play. Horses do it too. They do it through running, leaping, prancing, any of those sort of excited movements that they do. Typically, it's something that male horses will do more than female horses, but they've all been known to do it. Horses have also been known to play games, which is a type of locomotor play. Horses can play tag, like they've been documented as just doing this with no like training to get them to do it, where they'll sort of chase each other and they'll take turns chasing each other. And they also play king of the hill, where if they have some sort of like hill or mound that they can climb up on, they'll like take turns running up there and they'll try to chase each other off and they'll play king of the hill, which is really cute. The other two types of play are forms of social play. So play fighting is where they essentially act out a fight, but they are usually more gentle and they stop before injury. A good way to tell if a horse is play fighting or if it's actually fighting is one, to watch their body language, but two, to watch which horse is playing the role of the attacker and which one is playing the defensive role. When they're play fighting, they tend to switch back and forth pretty consistently. But if you notice that one horse is consistently having to defend itself while another attacks it, it could be a more serious fighting problem rather than like a play fighting situation. But horses tend to be really careful about not hurting each other. If one member of the herd is hurt, that puts the entire herd in danger. So it's really uncommon for horses to want to hurt other horses. There's a little more complex stuff surrounding like stallion fights and stud fights, but that's a little out of the scope of this podcast, so we'll move right along to the next type of social play, which is mating play. So that's when horses flirt and form their little pairs, when the boy horsies and the girl horsies like to play with each other. And we'll leave it at that because I don't know how many kids I have listening. So moving right along, the sixth key need is the need for exploration. This is another thing that stalls really don't do well. Exploration is their ability to investigate and explore. Typically that's done through ranging, seeking, and object play. So they'll range to investigate and explore the territories around them. They'll seek for resources to explore what options they have throughout their environment. And they'll engage in object play to explore like particular objects. It can be hard for them to do object play if there's a lot of hot wire. It discourages them from investigating things with their nose. And horses also are often punished for object play. I'll see horses that are, maybe they're tied or they're in a grooming spot, whether it's like a stall or a cross tie or a tie post or whatever. And there'll be something for them to play with. Maybe they'll want to play with a rope or maybe it's the chain or the rope that they're tied up with. Maybe there's a halter hanging up on the wall or a fly mask or a brush on a ledge and they want to play with it. And personally, since I was a kid, every time I saw that, I thought it was really cute. I was like, oh, he's playing with it. But I was quickly taught that that was bad, that you should punish your horse for doing that. It's disrespectful. And now that I am an adult with lots of knowledge and training in animal behavior, I know that that's absolutely not true. They're not being disrespectful. They're engaging in a totally normal behavior where they see something and they want to investigate it. What you can do in that situation is if you know you don't want your horse to investigate something, you can keep it out of their reach. So just keep it somewhere where they can't get to it. It's pretty unfair to like punish them for playing in general and to expect them to just ignore their surroundings and not want to investigate. And personally, I think that's a little unethical, that we should be fostering that desire to explore and to act out normal behaviors rather than discouraging it. Moving on to number seven. Number seven is territorialism. This one is commonly misconstrued. Territorialism is, simply put, just the ability to have a territory that meets all of their needs. When it comes to herds in nature, territories are often overlapping and they are ever changing. So as different resources become available and the seasons change and things change, the territory will change. The territory is not the same way that like a lot of like predatory creatures have like a set territory and no other animals of their kind are allowed in it. It's much more relaxed with horses. Their territory is just their area that they tend to explore. And ideally the enclosure they're in is their territory. It's the space they occupy. And it should meet all of their needs. In order for them to be satisfied with their territory, it should have everything they need to meet all their needs, with the exception of maybe they need some additional time for ranging and seeking, where they move away from their territory to look for other things. That said, they can still range and seek. If they have enough space, then the herd can move around within the territory, or a smaller group or pair can break off and seek for food or browse within the territory. The very last key need is association. This is the need for social belonging and a secure membership in a herd. This one can be really hard for horses in captivity because we're constantly changing the horses that they interact with. We move horses from facility to facility, and they often have to interact with different horses consistently throughout their lives. And that can be really hard because it's really unnatural for there to be that much change in herd dynamics. Ideally, you would want to let your horses have a secure herd, which stays steady throughout their lifetime. And that is why you should buy more horses. No, I'm just kidding. But when at all possible, try to help your horse feel secure in a herd. Make sure that they have enough space, that they can interact with each other and not feel overcrowded, but they also aren't totally isolated from each other or in a situation where they can end up in isolation or are put in isolation. You want them to have access to other horses. If you're keeping horses on your own property, you should definitely have at least two horses, because horses should not be kept alone and they should not be kept in isolation. That will be very detrimental to their feeling of safety. Other animals can fulfill some social needs, but horses really need other horses. They are herd creatures and they need other horses around. And that concludes the eight needs of the horse. Hopefully this podcast has given you a good introduction to the things you need to do to properly care for a horse. I hope that it will help a few horses have happier, healthier lives. And I hope that it can help you if you've been challenged with some behavioral problems that you're having issues getting resolved. Maybe if you take a look into some of these needs, you can get that figured out. If you have any questions or you want me to go over anything in more depth, feel free to send me a message. I accept voice messages on Anchor. I'm also on Instagram, Facebook. I have an email account. I have a telephone. You can reach me however you would like. And I'm happy to discuss things or to go into more detail next week. For now, this has been episode 2 of the Plus R Purist, and I'll see you next Thursday, 8 a.m.